Welcome back to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I've got the king himself joining me today. Really grateful for this man, Sabri Subi, the founder and head of growth of Australia's fastest growing full service digital marketing agency, King Kong, author of an international bestseller, Sell Like Crazy, incredible book, guys. Highly recommended. It's my top three business books that have changed my life and the way I view business. One of the five investors in the 2023 season of Shark Tank Australia, and my favorite TV show. And he is responsible for generating $7.8 billion in sales for his clients, plus so much more. There's so much more depth to Sabri, which we're going to be going into today, which I hope you guys really enjoy. Sabri, thank you for joining me today, my man.
No problems. Thanks for having me on.
Man, I like to do this with my clients. I'd like to actually ask you this for someone who's running a business and got a huge team making heaps of impact, got so many things going on. How are you personally and professionally out of 10 each and why?
Yeah, for me, I've always looked at it through the growth lens, right? And I probably think that on both of those realms, I'm probably a 5 out of 10.
Okay.
What is that? Yeah. So like the thing that gets me up in the morning and gets me excited is like from my potential of where I am right now and where I'm operating to where it is that I think that I could possibly be. And I always imagine this scenario that I'm walking around in the world somewhere. And if I was to ever meet the other Sabri, that if I have done everything right, has lived up to their potential, right? And think about the difference of where I am operating right now and then where I could possibly be operating as an individual. And that is the thing that keeps me motivated. I always think that the lid on any business, on anything, is completely the founder that is in charge of that. History has proved time and time again that realistically, the limiting constraint is just the think. It's the think of the person who is in that vehicle. So yeah, I would probably equally rate myself a 5 out of 10 on both of those domains.
Man, beautiful way of thinking. That quote comes to mind. It's like true failure or suffering is when the current version of you meets the person you could be. And it's a beautiful lesson in there. Man, for people that don't know who you are, they're living under a rock. They haven't seen your fucking hilarious ads everywhere. I've send whenever I'm working with clients and they're like, oh, how do I do marketing better? I just fucking send them your shit and all your ads. Give us a quick elevator pitch on who Sabri is.
Yeah, well, I guess I spend most of my day right now obsessed with solving the number one problem that businesses face, which is how do I get more customers? You know, if we want to dial it back a lot, you know, I grew up in a small beach town, Byron Bay. I was raised by a single parent mother. I wasn't raised with a lot of means. And I saw what the lack of money can do to a household and made the decision that I didn't want to go through that and got my start in sales. And sold everything that you can imagine all over the world. And that kind of made me fall down the rabbit hole that is like sales and marketing. And ever since I was 22, I've been kind of running and selling businesses and running some into the ground and learning a lot of lessons along the way. And all of those different roles and all of that journey has kind of led me to where I am today, which is at King Kong. And basically we solve that problem for businesses. I believe that business is like a huge vehicle to drive a lot of change in the world. I don't think about that we're just creating offers and building landing pages and funnels, but more so the vehicle of like, who is the person on the other end of that and whose life can you change as a result of doing that? So yeah, that's the thing that kind of I'm obsessed with and basically making that accessible to as many business owners as I can.
Powerful, man. I've heard your story a fair few times through a fair few podcasts that I've seen you on. I'd love to know from your perspective here, what has growing up with a single mother who I remember the story with the harmonica, you made some money, gave it to mom. It was one of the most beautiful moments of your life. How has growing up with a single mother, how has that shaped you into the man, into the leader, into the person that you are today?
Yeah, I say often that like I would rather be raised by a strong woman than a weak man, right? Mm. And I think that the thing, like one of the biggest lessons that I've taken from that is just seeing the single parent mother work ethic and seeing my mom hold down three jobs. And, you know, I used to go with her before school and job number one was working at a cafe and I would bring out the metal chairs and tables for her. And then she would go to job number two and job number three and then get home job number four, right? Which is raising a family. And not only that, but being like doing the responsibility that is usually shared by two people, but just being one person to do that. Yeah. And I think that, you know, that unconditional love and the life that she was able to support, it's like, you know, you want to make your why so big that the how becomes easy.
Yeah.
And for my mother, that why was us, right? And it was at her children. So there's like, there's no fire that she wasn't willing to walk through in order to provide an incredible life for us, which she did.
Yeah. Powerful, man. How is that translated into business now? So fast forward to who you are now and maybe having a look at how you run your business from a bird's eye view. How has that shaped you as the entrepreneur that you are today?
I think that the single most important lesson that any entrepreneur can learn is that the number one thing that they can control is their effort, right? And how much effort that they put into the role. You might be in a position where your competitors are better funded than you. They've got more money to spend on marketing. They've got some tie up, some special relationships that allow them to get clients or grow business or lockouts or anything like that, right? All of those things aren't within your power. The one thing that is within your power is the effort side of things. So from early on in my career, like, you know, I didn't have the advantages of having any, you know, balling buddies or rich uncles or anyone to give me a leg up, right? I had to pull myself up from my bootstraps and do it myself through effort. And whether I was in sales, I was at my first job, I was the worst salesperson that they had, right? So I was the runt of the litter. And it wasn't that I had some exceptional ability, but it was really just brute forcing my way through it through complete, like, just uncontrollable work ethic that went into the role. And I would just simply outwork everybody, right? And it's like that work is required. Like, you have to get so many reps in order to be good. Most people want to be good straight out of the gate, right? Where that's not how it works, right? There's nowhere where the result comes before the effort and the work. So I've just tried to basically have that in all areas of my life. It's like, I know that I want the outcome, that there isn't some secret pill or anything. It's like, it's simply a matter of hard work. Yes, you need to row the boat in the right direction. But there's so many things that are outside of your power when you're running a business. And the one thing that isn't is how you react to those things and also the amount of effort that you put into it.
Man, there's so much, like, you've just the way you're speaking, there's a foundational of mindset. I know that's such a sort of broad term to use, but there's a level of resilience, there's a level of focus, there's a level of grit, there's a level of just emotional intelligence and strength within you. Where does that come from? I know that's such a broad question. It probably ties into mum, ties into all your challenges, your overwhelm or your defeats and how you've gotten back up. What's been some of the biggest mindset shifts along your journey to who you are today?
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, I've always been obsessed with growth, right? And like in every and all domains of my life is looking to like grow, right? Whether it's like my relationships or my physical or business or mindset or any of those kind of things. It's like the thing that really keeps you motivated and keep you going is just to be a voracious learner and to be somebody that is always looking to get to that next level, right? And a lot of times that's looked through like a negative lens, or people look at it through like a capitalistic way of like wanting more and greed. No, no, no. Like, it's growth by any means, right? Through all endeavors that you go through. The moment that you stop growing, you start dying, right? There is no such thing as maintaining the status quo and where you are. Like, that is a flat line, right? And whether that's your heart rate or it's a business, a flat line means death. So like, you do not want that. You want to be growing. So I think that, you know, I've been fortunate to spend a lot of time alone, do a lot of thinking, and work on myself as an individual, and be very conscious of that. I think that, you know, I really had to boil it back. Yes, it's my mother and like the values that she ingrained with me as a child. And then also as a result of that, it's like, I have spent so much time speaking with humans all over the world, right? Like, when I was on the phones, for instance, in London on an auto dialer making 600 dials a day, right? I would literally physically be speaking to probably 300 people per day.
Yeah.
And I did that for years on end in all different roles that you can imagine. So the amount of people that I would speak to in a day is what most people would speak to in 3 months, or maybe in a month. So it's like that level of education, it cannot be bought. You cannot go to university to learn that much about human psychology. I have like spoken to people all over the world, even with my programs now. We have students in 136 different countries all around the world. I just jumped off a Zoom call with them now. And it's having that exposure to so many people in all different walks of life. It teaches you a lot about the human condition.
What is, I guess, flowing on from that, what's the common traps you see, mainly with, I'm sort of going business owners right now, or people in general, if you want to go general, what are the, trap might not be the right word, downfalls, limiting ways of thinking that you see with people that you deal with, whether it's your team or business owners, that stop them from fucking leveling up and growing in their life?
It's a lack of responsibility. I think that everyone likes to have a claim to a lack of resources, whether it's time, money, know-how, people, and they look to blame something that is outside of their control for the reason that they're currently in the situation that they are, right? Where anybody that's done anything knows that that is not the case. It is simply a lack of resourcefulness and that person being willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done. Because in the day and age that we live in today, where everything is accessible, I say that there is no problem that you can't solve with credit card and a Google, right? Yes. Like a Google account and a credit card. Like you, there's no problem that you can't solve without those two things. Yeah. And once you know that, then realistically, what is it that holds people back? And it's a willingness to go through the motions and to do the boring work to get it done and to do the problem solving and to do the iterations. Because if you don't have that commitment and that hunger, then you'll always be stuck at the plateau because change is the price of progress, right? And while it's not always easy to live with, it's like that change and that constant wanting to grow to the next level is the price that you have to pay. That's the down payment.
Man, there's a quote that comes to mind. It's like if you're choosing to stay the same or you're choosing to change. And if you're choosing to stay the same, you're choosing to keep on the bullshit and the challenges that you're currently dealing with. Something just came to mind for me then. How do you balance this in a team setting? So you've got a big team, you work with people every single day. How do you balance it? And a bit of context for me, a great coach, a great leader knows how to support, but also challenge. And there's the balance between that. Too much challenge, you break. Too much support, you become weak. How do you find that balance for yourself with your team of how to get them to take action, challenge them to it, but also give them that a cuddle, a kiss, or whatever they need to get their shit together? How do you find that balance as a leader?
Yeah, I think the first lesson on leadership is learning to lead yourself first. And that's the thing that most people don't do. A lot of people like to complain that they can't find good people or that their team isn't doing the things that they want them to do. Again, that comes from the lens of like, that's outside of my power, right? So the first lesson for me on leadership is just like leading myself and making sure that like I'm doing what it is that I need to do and I'm being the example, not the warning, right? So I don't want to, in our business, we try to create a pretty autonomous work environment of saying like, this is the goalpost that we're trying to string for and then let's go for it. I really try as much as I possibly can, even though that I'm not perfect, of like hiring really smart people and then having them tell me what to do, not the other way around. Yeah. And I think that, yeah, it is one of those situations where if you're always forever going to be the person that is providing all of the support, then you will forever be the constraint in your business. You will always be the bottleneck, right? And it's very difficult to let go of that control. It has been a continuous journey for me and I am still dealing with that and still doing that is just getting to the point where you just release control at all the steps of the way because you have to get out of your own way in order to really blow the business up.
You've mentioned in a podcast that's just coming to me now, there was like every stage of business requires a different version of yourself and you need to evolve and grow and shed old beliefs or old ways of thinking. What's the current challenge that you're solving for yourself as a leader for your business?
Yeah, I think that all business problems, you know, are masquerading as business problems when they're really just a reflection of the founder, and it's a personal limiting belief of that. And it's all, I always try and think about that, right? I always try to think of like, what is the limiting belief that I am currently imposing on either myself and consequently the business, as a result of being trying to get to the next level. So it's a continuous evolution. I wouldn't be able to point to one thing. I would probably say it's still like the control piece. And a lot of businesses and a lot of founders get wrapped up in their identity being one of the business, right? And then they stop working on themselves because they think that the business is themselves.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why a lot of founders that sell businesses have like this existential crisis, where once they sell a business, it kind of, they sell their identity that is attached to that business. So it's been something that I've been very conscious of throughout my journey, is like working on myself as the individual that is Sabri and not working on the business, thinking the business is me.
Yeah. How do you do that? Like, are you a meditator? Do you have a coach? Do you, I'm assuming you're a student of learning. I've heard you mention that on other things I've heard as well. How do you constantly, because I find this, I'm a mindset coach, so I'm kind of taking my own medicine right now. It's hard to see the forest through the trees. It's hard to see that limiting belief because it's, I love that quote. It's, we challenge all of our beliefs except for the ones we truly believe, those ones we never think to question. So it's like, it's hard to have that introspective work for someone who's probably very new to it, or even people that are quite seasoned at it as well. How do you keep yourself growing and challenging your own beliefs? Is it mentors? Is it books? Is it meditation? Like, what do you do?
I would say that I spend a lot of time thinking, right? I try and spend an equal amount of time thinking than I do consuming. And in today's day and age where there's like information is so available, and you know, people are in the shower listening to podcasts, in the gym, like there's no minute where they're not trying to get internal, external inputs into their brain. When in all reality, like most of the answers to the questions that you have are not in a book.
Yeah,
you already know them, right? And it's just like mental masturbation of thinking that there is some new, novel, shiny piece of information that is out there that is going to unlock the key to what needs to be done. That is usually not the case, right? I'm not downplaying the need for education. I'm huge. I read a lot of books. All of my mentors are from books. They're from people that usually aren't alive still. And that's where I do make sure that I am continuously feeding the fire, but I spend an ample amount of time actually just thinking and sitting on the things that I do know that need to be done and that are more difficult to do than going out and consuming more information. So I think that in the start of your career, it's really important for you to read wide and learn wide. You know, I'm very big on being like a polymath and being like a very balanced individual in all the different forays of human pursuit. But then once you have a good foundation of like, I know I need to get good quality sleep. I know I need to exercise. I know my relationships are really important. I know that I need to spend time working on myself as an individual. And you know all, and then there's business and all the other stuff. Then it's about reading and learning narrowly to solve a specific problem or a bottleneck that is apparent in the business, where a lot of people, they think that they just need to read more books on business or copywriting. And it's like, no, you know everything now. Like you need to go out there and take action. And then when you do come to a roadblock where there is something that you don't know, then go out there and seek that information, get it, and then execute immediately.
I love the mental masturbation line. I use it with my clients all the time. Like I've got friends that are still doing it. They're going to the Tony Robbins events. They're going to the Gary Vee events, the Success Resources. And it's like, they're still in the same fucking spot. It's like, take fucking action, like go do something. So on that line, you just said, what do you think about a lot that you don't get to share openly very often?
It's a great question. I think that like for me, the most of the things you know, that I ponder is not something as deep as like what the meaning of life is, right? I stopped asking that question a long time ago, but it's more so like just continually pushing the limitations of what I have imposed on myself, and what do I think my potential is? Because ultimately, that's what it all comes down to, right? Like you get to a point where money has no more marginal utility for you, and that is therefore not the game anymore. And once that happens, then you start looking at like, okay, well, what do I do now that money isn't the game that I'm playing for, right? So yeah. What is the game that I'm playing for? And I think that if you keep pondering that question, which I have pondered for hours on end, yeah. and think about, you really arrive at like, well, like, what is it that you would choose to fill your day with? What is it that you get fulfillment with? And for me, it is that constant thing of growth and looking at like, how do I get better by 1 to 2% in all forays of all the things that it is that I'm doing. But more importantly than all of those things is how do I continuously have more fun than I had the year before? And I think that early on in my career, I got caught up in business and growth and being perceived a specific way or fitting into a mold rather than just being who I am, right? And having the best time doing that, because that is the only thing that you can do that is truly unique. You know, in the ads and all of that stuff that you see, like that's me, like having a lot of fun with what it is that I do, right? And just being me, which no one else can be. And it's like that Naval quote, right? You want to do things that look like work to others and that feel like play to you.
Yeah.
But this feels like play to me, right? If I was to go and retire for a year or two and sit on the beach, I would basically regress back to the mean of what it is that I am excited and lights me up and what I am passionate about. And that is driving change through growing businesses and solving that problem for people and then seeing what the material impact that has on somebody's life, both financially and mentally.
Yeah.
And then having a look at the effects of how that impacts their immediate family, how that impacts their community, how that affects people that are looking to them to see what is possible, right? And driving that change. That's the vehicle and that's the lever that I have that I can help.
Man, what do you do for you? What's the Sabri outside of the sort of King Kong marketing Shark Tank world? What's fun for you outside of that?
Yeah, I spend like, I sauna, I cold plunge, I've got, you know, three girls and a lovely wife. So my life is very committed. Like, you know, like for instance, today, like literally every minute of my day right now is fully in the calendar. And I make sure that like I show up present and I have a lot of energy to put back and give other people and push back out into the world. And then for me, like I find that if I don't spend time alone, if I don't spend time in solitude, in the sauna, on walks in nature, spend time with my family, like I see the time alone with myself. If I didn't do that, I would be very selfish.
Yeah.
Because other people might look at that as like spending time alone might be selfish in itself, but ultimately you are the vehicle for energy that is able to then show up for your family, for your team members, for your students, for your clients, and all of those kind of things. So you really got to spend that time in focusing on yourself and really like your own company.
Yeah.
And that's where I think for a lot of people is because they have so much external stimulus through ads and social media and content and podcasts and all of that, is that they just don't spend any time alone.
Yeah.
And they don't spend any time thinking because there is no time to think. Every minute of their day is completely consumed with some type of activity. And that's because they are completely frightened to spend some time with themselves.
Were you like that yourself when you first started this?
No, I wasn't. I think that as a child, I've always kind of spent a lot of time in solitude and like thinking or doing creative work of some endeavor. I think like that work on yourself is the work in itself. And like it really, really spills out into other things. Cause I just try to be conscious. I try to be as conscious as I can about those things of like, yeah, okay. Like, you know, I've just grinded 10 hours in the office and now I'm going home to my family. Like, I don't want to be like that deadbeat dad that shows up with a level 3 out of 10 of energy. Yeah. And then my family get the scraps of who I am as a man, right? I want to like, that's like that moment when you go home and you walk in the door and your children run up to you. Like, that's an important moment, right? And you have to kind of be very present of that. And the only way that you can do that is by working on yourself and being aware of all of those things that go into life.
Without, it's, you're being the best version of your limited self by not prioritizing your needs, your wants, and I guess whatever fills yourself up.
Yep.
You've mentioned kids, family a fair bit, just to give you a bit of scope on what I love and what really fascinates me and my curiosity comes from is that your professional life is an expression of who you are, and that shows up a lot in your personal life. And I would say your relationship is a magnifying glass for the work you haven't done. That's where they trigger you, they push your buttons, they challenge you, and all that good stuff. I'd love to know from you, man, for someone who's done very well commercially with his business and everything that you're doing, what has been the challenge for you being a parent, and how has that translated into your business?
I think that the two big takeaways and the two big lessons that it has taught me thus far along the journey is unconditional love, right? People talk about unconditional love. You will never experience it until you have a child, right? And the moment that that happens and you realize that, you know, if people get frustrated with their children, or they lose their temper, or they don't like a certain way that their child is acting, or any of those things, there is no more pure example of that your children are just a manifestation of you. You brought them into this planet. You created the conditions that they live in. You gave them the beliefs that they have to act the way that they are. So any level of frustration that you have in a certain moment with your child is just a reflection of something that you have done. And just it is that in its absolute most purest form. And so I think just like having that unconditional love and patience with your children. And it's definitely like the bond between a daughter and a father is a very incredible thing. For me, I didn't grow up without a father. So I grew up without having a father in my life. So I had to basically build the identity of a father, that the father that I wish that I had growing up. Right. So I think that it gives you a clean slate and it allows you to show up in the way that you would have liked your father to show up.
Yeah.
And then the other big takeaway I think is just having, like, you know, my name means patience in Arabic. And there is no other sense of the word that is more important with your children is having that patience. And, you know, it's very easy to get caught up when your life is very busy in not stopping and appreciating those small moments, or not thinking that you need to be in the moment and live out the moment that that small little human is experiencing. And then you think back when you were a child, whether you were 3 or 5 or 7, I've got fond memories and very visceral memories of all of those times. Yeah. And how special the smallest things in life are. And when someone is experiencing that for the first time, how incredible that world is that they're discovering. And being present and understanding the gravitas of that situation. And while it might just feel mundane for you or very normal to you, that experience for this person is the first time that they've ever experienced that. And just like letting yourself go and getting completely wrapped up as a child in that experience with them and allowing them to, you know, crank up the hue saturation on that experience as much as they can.
That's beautiful, man. That was a beautiful story. I'm curious if you're okay going here, because I wrote it down in my notes. For someone who's grown up without a father, now being a father yourself, what does being a great father look like and mean to you?
Yeah, I think that the thing that it sport like, you know, spills over to is also like being like a great leader. Like there's a lot of different areas to kind of be a great man, right? And being a great father is just one of those. I think it's, you know, it's the perfect balance of having like empathy and being to love unconditionally. But then also being the role model, knowing that, you know, largely a daughter's relationship with their father will mirror what it is that they look for in a man out in the world.
That's powerful.
And looking for that I am setting the example and that I'm not being the warning, right? And so thinking through that process of everything that I'm doing, am I setting a good example of what it is that I want my daughters to tolerate in a partner when they go out into the world, right? And it just forces you to act from a different place because it's just it's you know, a completely different stakes of the situation. It's not like, oh, well, I had a rough day, or I'm low on energy, or I had all these bushfires that I had to put out in my business. But you're being the example, not the warning.
That's powerful, man. I had a lot of light bulbs just then. So that was some beautiful shit. How does that translate into your business? How does that show up commercially for you? All the growth that your daughters have given you?
Yeah, I still think that I have a long way to go on leading people because I still have a long way of leading myself, right? If I score myself as a 5 out of 10 from myself, that means that invariably I'm a 5 out of 10 as a leader. Yeah. So I think that it's about trying to support people where you can and use myself as the standard of like how much that I expect of myself and that I expect more of myself than I expect from any of the people that I work with.
Yeah.
Powerful. Right. I'm still the first person in the office. I still work incredibly hard. Anything that I do, I'm always trying to do it for the best of my ability that Sabri in this year and in this snapshot in time is capable of. And then every year that rolls by, if I don't look back and think, man, that Sabri of last year, I would kick that dude's ass. Like I'm like a way better business person, a way better marketer. I'm stronger. I'm fitter. All of those things, then I'm not showing up, right? And I'm not leading myself by leading the example. So I don't ask my team to do anything that I don't do myself. I've done every single role in the company. And I know what's involved to do that. And I haven't done it for short periods of time. I've done it for long, extended periods of time. So I think that that's the thing that I look for is being able to provide myself as the example of the standard of what it is that I require.
That's beautiful, man. Beautiful leadership and just for business and for personal life. So that's really, really cool. Man, there's a couple of questions just with the time that we've got left. If you were to write a second book, I'm not sure if you are, but again, to shout out with your book, Sell Like Crazy, incredible for anyone that wants to make some more sales for their business. If you were to write another one, but it was all about your personal lessons, what would be the top three pillars or lessons or chapters that you'd want to put in that book?
It's a very deep question. I've often thought about like writing a personal book for my family.
I love that.
Which would basically be like all the cheat codes of life and like all the small little hacks that I've found out that have really made an impact and a difference on my life, all the way from like the big pillars of like prioritizing sleep and health, because if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. And all the way down to negotiating how to get better rates on your utilities, right? And everything in between. But I think that if, you know, if I was going to be writing a book on personal lessons that I've learned, it would realistically about like, I look at it as like a pyramid, right? And I look at like, it doesn't matter what the pursuit is that you go down in life, whether you want to be an artist or a producer or a business builder or a dancer, all of those things are going to require a crazy amount of work, right? To be a master at those things. And to understand that like you're only as good as the base that you push out on the world. And ultimately everyone has the same 24 hours in a day, right? However, the people, if you look at excellence in any pursuit of life, they have the same 24 hours that the person who is striving to have that excellence, right? So then what makes the difference in those two individuals, right? It's not the time, and it is not the resources, right? And a lot of the time, it really comes down to the person who has the most energy makes the most money. The person who has the most energy gets the most gains, right? And whoever has the most energy sees the most progress. Because it's not just about managing your time, it's about managing the output within that time and managing yourself as an individual. And I think that no matter what that pursuit is, you can look at any endeavor, right? And you will always see that the outliers like are the ones that have consistently just put in a ridiculous amount of time, but also effort and passion into that role. And the ones that are super, super successful are the ones that the work feels like play to them.
Yeah.
And that allows them to kind of do their best work. So I just don't think that there is enough emphasis placed on like the individual in any of the realms. It's always on the utility of the skills or the techniques or the hidden way that they do things.
Yeah.
But when you spend a lot of time alone, or when you spend a lot of time pondering, or you spend a lot of time about how to get to the next level, you know, you realize that it isn't some outside power that is got these answers to those things.
Man, really, really deep stuff, man. This has been really awesome just to hear that extra depth too, because I find people's perceptions of people through social media and the content they put up can, obviously there's value to it, but I always know there's other facets to people. So man, I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. I would kick myself if I didn't go into the Shark Tank stuff. So I'd love to know, man, a Shark Tank's favorite show. Not to diss the Australian one, I've always preferred the US one in comparison to it. So when it kind of died off, I was a bit upset, but I was like, oh, well, I'll just keep watching the US one. And then I saw you coming into it. I was like, fuck yes, some energy's coming into the Shark Tank. What's that been experience like from you? Like, I think you posted a video the other day about it, how like you got a request and you didn't know if it was bullshit or not, or if it was legit. What was the sort of, from a personal experience, what's it been like for the Shark Tank?
Yeah, it's been cool. Yeah, I originally got like reached out by the producers, and I get lots of like, you know, solicitations from all over the world that a lot of them are scams, or yeah, like, hey, we want to put you in this award on this magazine cover. You just have to pay this small fee, $500 fee.
Yeah.
But they came in hot and hit me on all different angles and then said, hey, like, hey, we want to speak to you about being on a TV show. And it was very cryptic. They didn't tell me anything about it. They wouldn't tell my assistant anything about it until they got a meeting with me. And then they got a meeting with me and they told me, cool, yeah, like it's for the Shark Tank. And I was like, yeah, like I'm definitely interested in finding out more about this. And those conversations went on for months. And then I was overseas and I got a text message on WhatsApp from one of the producers and being like, why aren't you responding to my text messages? Are you overseas? And I'm like, yes, I am. And then we're like, this was like 6 months after the time that they initially reached out to me. And then she just FaceTimed me and told me the news and said, yeah, you're going to be filming. And then we still didn't know who the other sharks were going to be on the show. They wouldn't tell us.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, cool, we want you to come and do like a press shoot on this date. And I think it was like a month later. And I was like, cool. When are we going to find out who the other sharks are? And they're like, oh, we still don't know. We're going to tell you that. I was like, okay, cool. And they didn't end up telling us. And it was like the day before. And I was speaking with the producer and I was like, when are we going to find out who the sharks are? And they were like, oh, we're not going to, we were thinking to film it all, like film you guys meeting tomorrow. And I'm like, that is a terrible idea. Like, you know, this isn't love at first sight. This is like, you know, we kind of need to know who it is. And then I think like, yeah, she got the message and it was like the day before we were meeting, she scheduled a Zoom chat.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that time's going to work for me. And my flight was delayed. And then I was late to the call. So they thought that I was being just some princess and that like I was like, you know, trying to be late to the call, which wasn't the case. And I ended up jumping on the call as the plane was landing. And then I, like you, had been a fan of the show for many, many years. And I just joined the Zoom call. And imagine it this way. You join the Zoom call. There's like seven other people on the call. There's a couple of producers. And then there's some other sharks, some that I recognized, some others that I didn't. And then like Robert Herjavec was on there. And yeah. I've been watching that dude for many, many years. And I was like, oh, guys, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm late, right? And I can't just be a part of this conversation without asking, what is Robert doing on this call? Like, is he just here as a hype man? Is he here to like pass the baton from America to Australia? And he was like, no, I'm going to be on the show. So that was like definitely like a cherry on top for me to have him involved. And then, yeah, we did like a whole bunch of PR stuff the next day. It was great to meet all the other sharks. We have an awesome panel. And I think it's like represents the new guard of business builders in this kind of digital economy that we live in. And we all bring something very, very different to it, which is awesome. And then it was 10 days of shooting, 14-hour days. So it was wow. Pretty intense. And you just see pitch after pitch after pitch. And people think that it's like Monopoly money. They think that we get a document handed to us with an executive summary of all of these entrepreneurs and a backstory and their financials. You get nada. You get none of that. They were absolutely, even on set, they wouldn't even let us peek through and see what the setup was. Yeah. You literally do not know until those doors open and the entrepreneurs come out. And just like the viewer sees, then we dive into the questioning and it's our money that we're investing. We don't know anything more than what we see in front of us. But what you don't see on TV is that some of these pitches go for 2 hours. And then out of those 2 hours, it will be a 7-minute edit. And then so out of those 7 minutes, each shark might speak for a minute or so each, give or take. Right? And that could be like a 2-hour talk on negotiation and line of questioning brought down to like 60 seconds, right? So it's a definitely a different experience to what the viewer sees on it. But yeah, it's been an incredible experience thus far.
What was it like going, I guess, what was a surprise that you didn't realize from being a big fan of it? Because I've heard you share that you're a big fan of the show for years, to being on the other side in the chair. What was like a light bulb or something that was surprising to you that you didn't think that was going to happen? What was the experience like?
I think the lens is like, I always, like when you're watching it as a viewer, you're critiquing the pitches, right? You're like, no, that pitch was shit. Like,
yeah,
they should have done that and all those kind of things. And that's always the lens that I've looked at it through. But then if you look at it through a more compassionate lens of like how hard that entrepreneur has worked to get into that position and what this moment means for them. Yeah. And like I always have the business hat on and I'm trying to like grill their business and find out all their numbers. That's just inherently me and who I am as an individual. And I'm not going to change that for anything, but it's also just stopping and thinking for a moment of like, this is a big moment for this person. Let me just think about their journey a little bit as well. Right. But also not getting caught up in that. There was a few moments that people got caught up in that in this season where I felt like their judgment was clouded by their emotions.
Yep.
And while I am the first person to get moved by an emotional story, I know how hard I've worked to accumulate the money that I have and the sacrifices that I've made in order to be in the position that I am as the investor on the other tank of that. And I think that on one side, it's television and yep. There's like the story and there's the people and there's the entertainment factor. And then on the other side, it's the full business hat and us wanting to make businesses that go out there and multiply our money. But then in the middle of that is also the lesson that you're teaching to the other entrepreneurs like me that was watching that from the outside and knowing that like, look, the world doesn't give a fuck about your story. They don't give a shit about any of that stuff, right? You have to go out there and create an immense amount of value in the marketplace. And then you are directly compensated for solving that problem, right? As much as I feel for you, boo-hoo, yeah. Right? Because everyone's out there in the marketplace getting bruised up, right? And that's not what a capitalistic society rewards. They don't reward just stories, right? They reward you in solving problems and adding value. And if you don't get an investment today, that is not an attack on, you know, you, right? but it signifies where you are at in the journey and what you've done, right? Because like that's the thing that I really look for as well, because it's like businesses fail, but founders don't. And it's like, it's all about the execution. The ideas are cheap. You've got to be able to go out there and execute. And I think that you need to get very clear on the message that you're also sending to the next generation of entrepreneurs that are watching this and they're saying, okay, that's what they value. That's what the market values. That's actually where a transaction took place. Yeah. The value in the mind of that investor exceeded the price that the entrepreneur was asking, and then an exchange was made.
I know we're very close to time, so last question before I wrap it up. What's for any entrepreneur that potentially has a vision of jumping on Shark Tank, what would you give them as a tip to give a better pitch to hopefully get a deal across the line if you were the shark in the chair?
Yeah, like anything, whether you're pitching on the phone, you're doing a door-to-door pitch, you're pitching, you know, a member of the opposite sex or maybe not of the opposite sex to go on a date or anything, is always first thinking who is the person that you're pitching to and put yourself in the shoes of that individual of what it is that they're going through, how they're feeling, what's going on in their life, what is it that they value, and what excites them, right? And knowing that when you walk into the Shark Tank, like a lot of these people don't know if they're pitch number one, pitch number two, pitch number 10, right? We've been sitting in a chair watching back-to-back pitches for 14 hours straight. Depending if you get us just before lunch, after lunch, if you get us at the end of the day, is going to be how we're different. But one thing that is going to be consistent with all of those things is we have seen a lot of what you're about to come and do. So you need to just grab our attention and come out the gate with energy and make a big, bold statement or a pattern interrupt that gets us to sit up in our chair and to pay attention at who this person is, right? And that's the very, very first thing. Then you create the attention, you get the interest, right? Now it's time to, you're going to start to infuse the interest in what it is that you've got. It's all storytelling at the end of the day. It's from the dawn of time of how to tell a good story. And then, you know, build interest in it, get desire by running us through all of your numbers, the social proof, how you're selling it, all of those kind of things. And then making your ask. And you can overcomplicate it all that you want, but that's all it comes down to, is that simple model of going out there, shaking us up, getting our attention, building interest and desire in what it is that you've got, and then making us an offer that would be too good to refuse.
Yeah. Simple, man. Very, very simple. You put it very, very well, man. We could chat for hours. I know you've got a lot of value to you. I appreciate your time today. For anyone that hasn't already grabbed yourself a copy of Sell Like Crazy, check out King Kong, check out Sabri's page, check out Shark Tank 2023, the Australian edition. My last question that I like to leave my guest with, Sabri, is what is something that you're working on a personal level that the world doesn't get to see?
All the inner workings that go on within myself, right? Like all of the shortcomings and the deficits that I have as a human in all the different endeavors in life that, you know, that I must suffer in silence and do the hard work on myself every day to show up out there in the marketplace. You get rewarded in public for what you practice intensely in private. And there's so much that goes into being a father, into being a partner, a man, a leader, a business builder in all of those endeavors. And people only see the external outcomes of those, the business success or Shark Tank or all of those things. They don't see the countless of hours that I've sat in solitude working on my craft and working on myself as an individual. And that is something that I will continue to do. I will be forever a student of the game, because the day that that stops happening is the day that I start dying. So yeah, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes.
Appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much. And for the listeners as well, hit up Sabri, check out his stuff, check out King Kong. One more time, man. Thank you for your time today.
No problems. Thanks for having me on, Lewis.